This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
In Kenya, the opposition has rejected a controversial new amendment to the electoral law and vowed fresh protests in the new year. The legislation passed Thursday gives the Electoral Commission the ability to manually identify voters and release results if biometric voter verification technology fails.
That's Mohamed Yusuf reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up.
Also, Gambian President Yahya Jammeh still refuses to concede defeat to challenger Adama Barrow.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story in the DRC, members of the Presidential Alliance and the country's main opposition coalition met again today to try to hammer out a deal on delayed elections. Mediators from the Catholic Church say the two sides need to reach an agreement before Christmas, but so far neither side is showing signs of compromise. William Clowes has the latest from Kinshasa.
The Archbishop of Kisangani, Monsignor Marcel Utembi, took a firm line as he reopened the talks in Kinshasa. Utembi said that the church mediators are not inclined to look favourably on further undue postponements and delaying tactics. He expressed the church's firm wish that a compromise be found before Christmas. Utembi is the president of SENCO, the organization that represents the Congolese Catholic Church, which is mediating the dispute over delayed elections. The talks were suspended on Saturday while a delegation of Congolese bishops visited the Pope to seek guidance on the crisis. During the break at midnight Monday, DRC President Joseph Kabila's elected mandate expired. He intends to remain in office until polls can be held. The leader of the Rassemblement, the country's main opposition coalition, Etienne Tshisekedi, responded by declaring Kabila illegitimate and calling the population to peaceful resistance. Security forces, heavily deployed since last week, put down sporadic demonstrations that started early Tuesday and continued into Wednesday in Kinshasa and other Congolese cities. Human Rights Watch says security forces have killed 34 people and that it is still verifying additional reports. The police have given a lower toll. A spokesman told reporters Wednesday that 21 civilians have been killed, most by stray bullets or while engaged in looting. The police said one of their officers was also killed. But the Rassemblement has returned to the negotiating table. The Secretary General of Tshisekedi's party, Jean-Marc Kabund, spoke to journalists as the talk resumed. He says, "We have come to find a solution as to the illegitimacy and illegality of Mr. Kabila. We have come to negotiate the departure of Mr. Kabila from power. This is all the population needs to know." The Rassemblement boycotted talks earlier this year that provisionally set the presidential election for April 2018. The Electoral Commission says it needs time to prepare an updated voter roll. Kabila has so far refused to agree to the Rassemblement's demand that he publicly commit to not seeking a third term, which is forbidden by the Constitution. The coordinator of the youth activism group The Fourth Way, Jean-Marie Kalonji, does not see the point of further dialogue. Kalonji told VOA that SENCO must explain to the people why the negotiations are continuing. Because the people of the DRC are turning the page and Kabila is no longer president. He says the dialogue does not make any sense, and that is why the Congolese youth protested on December 19th without the opposition calling for it. Tensions do not look to be abating anytime soon. A police spokesman said that the enhanced security presence will remain in place until the end of the year. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
In Kenya, the opposition has rejected a controversial new amendment to the electoral law and vowed fresh protests in the new year. The legislation passed today gives the Electoral Commission the ability to manually identify voters and release results if biometric voter verification technology fails, which the opposition says may compromise nationwide elections planned for August. Mohamed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi.
Tensions were high at Parliament Thursday. Despite heavy security, there was commotion inside the chambers, with both sides reporting lawmakers injured. The opposition then walked out of the special session before the vote, leaving legislators from the ruling Jubilee coalition to pass the amendment to the electoral law that would allow hand counting of votes. Debate on the proposed legislation had adjourned Tuesday amid fistfights on the parliament floor. National Assembly Majority Leader Aden Duale blamed the opposition.
Just because they believe in the culture of violence, you have seen their intention is to fight democratically established institutions.
Opposition members say the government wants to use the manual voter verification system to rig the August 2017 presidential election, a claim denied by the Jubilee administration. As Parliament voted Thursday, opposition members walked to the courts to challenge the legality of the special sitting. Justice George Odunga ruled the judiciary cannot stop the work of the Parliament, but left the door open to a challenge after the vote.
Having considered the issue raised before me in this application at this stage, I do not find any compelling reason why Parliament ought to be stopped from proceeding with the debate. Thereafter, depending on what it decides, this court will be at liberty to scrutinize this process to see whether it did actually comply with the law and the constitution.
The law now awaits the signature of President Uhuru Kenyatta. Opposition core principal Kalonzo Musyoka is calling for protests.
January the 4th
will be the beginning of civil action so that at least we can face the next elections in August with certainty.
Opposition leader Raila Odinga warned the opposition will boycott the election if there is doubt it is free, fair and credible. He says the opposition does not want violence. It wants the election process to be transparent. He says the people are using the power given by the constitution to call on Kenyans to peacefully demonstrate. Protests in May and June turned violent as opposition supporters demanded the electoral commissioners resign, accusing them of favouring the ruling Jubilee coalition. The commissioners have since stepped down and a joint committee was appointed to work on electoral reforms that were approved by Parliament in September. Jubilee lawmakers say the Electoral Commission then recommended the amendment passed Thursday. The opposition has requested proof of that request. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In the Gambia, President Yahya Jammeh continues to refuse to concede defeat in elections earlier this month. They show him losing by 4 percentage points to challenger Adama Barrow. Jammeh is taking his case to the Gambia Supreme Court. He says there were too many voting irregularities and that the vote needs to be held again. John Tomaszewski is the regional director for Africa at the International Republican Institute in Washington. He told reporter William Eagle that the election was among the most transparent ever held in the Gambia.
Well, I would say that, you know, in talking with our local partners and from our own assessment, these were the most transparent elections in Gambian history. The opposition coalition particularly was large enough that it had the resources to actually have a polling agent at each of the 1,422 polling stations. I think that's an important point. Also, in past elections, voting drums for each candidate were collected in counting centers and then tallied, which of course led for a lot more fraud. This time there was on-the-spot counting, which is different from previous elections, so also created more transparency and openness and helped sort of deter fraud. The other point, of course, is the election chair. Mr. Njie was proved to be quite an independent player. In terms of fostering and moving the process forward, he's provided equal. He made sure that all the parties had equal access to state TV, and clearly, as we've seen in the post-election fallout, he's even said that he would defend in the Supreme Court should a case go 100% of the vote that it was legitimate. So I think there's a lot of key elements here that have made this election a lot different than others.
President Jammeh said that the elections were not conducted fairly and that the new polls should be held under what he calls a God-fearing electoral commission. How did you find the behavior and the management of that commission? Did the president have a role in choosing its members, and did the commission respond in a timely manner to complaints?
It is true that the election chairperson, the Independent Electoral Commission chairperson, is appointed directly by the president. It is important to point out, though, that when the error in the final numbers of all the candidates were tallied, and this error was discovered actually by civil society organizations who caught the mistake and tried to reach the IEC to get them to change it, they were not successful. But ultimately, the IEC caught the error, and in a December 5th press release, I think, they put out that these numbers needed to be updated, which changed Barrow's margin of victory instead of 5% to 4%. So I think overall, we've seen that the IEC actually has been responsive. And in the sort of the post-election media frenzy, the IEC chair has actually, again, been sort of a voice of reason in a few cases where clearly the president has tried to, or the incumbent president has tried to say that these elections weren't fair and free. And, you know, it's just not true.
Is it likely that the Supreme Court will side with the president and call for new elections?
Well, it's important to point out that the Supreme Court is not fully constituted at present. And the opposition coalition and the Gambian Bar Association are in agreement that the case cannot be tried without a fully constituted Supreme Court. And the opposition has also warned against John May appointing new justices, given that he is an interested party in the case. So we're sort of in a bit of a constitutional dilemma here. Now, that doesn't stop the incumbent president in the past, but certainly I think when you look at it on paper in terms of the Constitution and the law, there's not much that can be done at this point. You can't bring a case to a court that is not legally constituted fully to hear the case. And John May is not in a position to appoint the justices needed to fill the court. So I think we're in a little bit of a crossroads here, and probably that'll bleed into some of the discussions that are underway with ECOWAS and some of the others as they look for a way forward.
And does ECOWAS have any tools that it can use to be persuasive, short of using force? Some people speak about sanctions.
They certainly haven't ruled out any use of force, and I think keeping that on the table is important. But, of course, they're pursuing, and they've shown this by the dedication of getting those of Mahama, you know, President Buhari, President Sirleaf, and others to really jump in and really get involved in the discussion about this and really get personally involved. You know, just also to note on Senegal that it has closed its borders with Gambia six times since 2000. So it's also important to note that you know, there could be other impacts. I mean, the Gambian economy is in tatters right now. Imagine if, you know, Senegal shut down the borders and other trade routes were restricted. You could see how there's a lot of leverage right now within these regional actors to make sure that this process moves forward as desired by the Gambians.
Is it also important to have an exit strategy for President Jammeh? Some have said that he may have changed his mind because he did not expect to lose, but also he has never created an exit strategy, and he may fear either domestic prosecution or prosecution by the ICC.
I think some of the statements that occurred following the election by members of the opposition about holding Jammeh to account are justified. I mean, if you think about the brutality of this leader and his regime and his intelligence service, they have a record that is very deplorable, and it makes sense that the opposition is assuring the people that they will move forward with a reconciliation process and, to some bit, a reckoning about how the government treated its people over this 22-year rule. But the exit strategy is this. Jammeh needs to concede. He needs to move on and allow Adama Barrow to take the oath of office and go through inauguration. There are places he can go, and he needs to start looking at those places. And it's incumbent upon that international community, civil society within the Gambia, and certainly the regional actors to continue the pressure.
That was John Tomaszewski, the Regional Director for Africa at the International Republican Institute in Washington. He spoke with reporter William Eagle.
Across Europe, there's a large-scale hunt for a Tunisian man suspected of driving a truck into a Christmas market in Berlin 3 days ago. Authorities believe that Anis Amri, was behind the attack, which killed 12 people and injured 48 others. The market has since reopened with concrete blocks to strengthen security. German authorities have issued a reward of $104,000 for information leading to the arrest of Amri. One of his brothers has urged him to surrender. The Associated Press says Amri had been considered a possible threat by the police and has been under surveillance for 6 months. Earlier this year, German authorities had been trying to deport him since July when his asylum application was rejected. The AP says a document belonging to him was found in the cab of the truck.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yais Wuhib. 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. In the DRC, members of the Presidential Alliance and the country's main opposition coalition met again today to try to hammer out a deal on delayed elections. And Gambian President Yahya Jammeh still refuses to concede defeat to challenger Adama Barrow. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Libyan Misrata forces recently announced mission accomplished in CERT against the Islamic State group. They say there's a final and total breakdown in IS ranks, with many of their militants surrendering. Many observers say the full political impact and ramifications of that are likely to be huge. If the fallout is handled positively, it could bolster the Government of National Accord, or GNA. It could also raise the stakes for Misrata and the Western region in supporting the political settlement in Libya. However, if it is mishandled and conflict breaks out in Tripoli, it could pull in forces from Misrata and could be the death knell for the GNA. Hani Khalaf is a former Egyptian ambassador to Libya. Reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi spoke with him about the continued division among Libyan factions that could affect the future of Libya.
There are so many factions among Libyans now since the fall down of Muammar al-Qaddafi. They are split into three entities. Each one of them is claiming for itself the legitimate right of ruling others. You can see in the eastern part of Libya, the parliament, which is internationally recognized, considering itself as the only ruler of Libya. In the other part of Tripoli, In the West, you can see the government of Khalifa al-Ghuwail, who is not recognized internationally, but actually is controlling some militias gathered from Misrata and Warshfana and Zawiya. These are parts of Tripoli and some other cities in the east of Tripoli. They claim for themselves the legitimate government. Now, after Sukhairat talks, which produced at the end the political settlement between different parties, it has introduced the new conciliatory government headed by Faiz al-Sarraj. And it has been recognized by the international community and the international envoy, Martin Kuppler. To a great extent, these differences and split between the three entities in Libya is not giving necessary environment to unify or to coordinate their reaction towards the radical Islamic movements, either Qaeda or Jamaa Islamiya, Islamic group, or the ISIS.
To complicate the situation in Libya, Libyan army leader Field Marshal Khalifa Haftar is moving to control more areas in central and southwestern Libya. What do you make of that?
I think he is trying to expand his control area over some new areas where some of the economic resources and mineral resources and petrol are more viable. Second, they may think that by reaching out for and controlling such areas would forbid ISIS and Qaeda groups from reaching this country.
What kind of a compromise or an initiative does Libya need to end the conflict and reach a political settlement?
I think revising the Suhairat Agreement is a must sometime. This would include enlarging the circle of participants in the dialogue to include also specifically the remaining peaceful people who used to work for the previous regime of Gaddafi, specifically those whose hands are not stained by the Libyans' blood. Second, it may also include the militia groups in the West and dissolving as well some of the already existing institutions and authorities to establish alternative institutions on the basis of new election, free and fair, which would be run and supervised internationally and by some representatives of the Arab League and maybe also of the African Union. Also, I would think of the importance of establishing a new international group capable and willing to sponsor the economic and the humanitarian aspects of the Libyan people, of the life of the Libyan people. That would include necessarily some Arab and neighboring countries.
That was former Egyptian ambassador to Libya, Hani Khalaf. He was speaking with reporter Mohammed Al-Shanawi.
A judge in the United Kingdom has released a former state governor of Nigeria after 7 years in prison in Bedford on corruption charges. British High Court Judge Juliet May ordered his immediate release yesterday. James Ibori admitted guilt in 2012 and was sentenced to 13 years in prison for money laundering and fraud of more than $70 million in Nigerian government funds. It's unclear if Ibori 57 is free or under house arrest. Home Secretary Amber Rudd told reporters he did not intend to deport Ibori until he handed over $22 million in proceeds of crime. His supporters in the Niger Delta danced for joy and set off fireworks upon hearing the news of Ibori's release. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.